This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, it's time to raise your game. I'm Tasha Fusil, and on today's show, we're going to start by asking a question. What would your life look like if there were no limitations? That's the question Dan Munro wants us to really think about. Dan's a confidence coach based in New Zealand, and he's written a book called The Legendary Life, which is all about helping you figure out what you really want in life so that you can have, you know, the good stuff, which is happiness, contentment, and satisfaction. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Hey, Tasha, thank you for having me.
Part of the reason that you wrote this book was because you had the nice guy syndrome and it wasn't working well for you?
Yeah, that was a big part of it. Writing this book was also an act of me doing what's right for me, you know, just the act of writing the book itself just for me. So that, it kind of doubles up. Part of it is the book is about how to create an authentic life, but writing the book was also about me being authentic to myself. It's kind of symbolic of the whole journey, really.
Okay, and what were you experiencing at the time that prompted you to write this book? What made you feel the need to do this?
Well, I'd been on my journey for a few years by that stage with this nice guy syndrome that we were talking about, which was, so I was undergoing a transformation from living the way I thought other people wanted me to live to living the way that was best for me. You know, I'd been doing that for a couple of years. And just before I wrote the book, I'd come to the point where I realized my career was really holding me back in this area. You know, I'd made all this progress socially. I had built my confidence in so many different areas. And yet I was still at a job that, you know, I'm working for somebody else. I didn't want to be doing that. And I wasn't doing exactly what I wanted to do to have an impact on the world. And this kind of it prompted me to just, I had 3 weeks off work. I was on holiday, and I spent almost that entire time writing the first draft of the book. I just went on this absolute writing binge.
Wow.
To try and get all my ideas out of my head, because I was just going crazy with them, you know. So I used that whole holiday to write the first draft, and it was terrible. The first copy of the book totally sucked. But it was out there, you know. I'd finally made a move, and that was the important part. And from there, you know, I just started getting people to give me feedback and rewriting it. But ultimately, what drove me to write it was a really strong internal push to be doing something more meaningful with my life, and in particular with my work.
And you mentioned before, you know, the book is about helping create an authentic lifestyle. What does that mean, an authentic lifestyle?
Yeah, it's a good question. That's one I continue to find new answers to. What I essentially mean by that is creating a life where from the moment you get up until the moment you go to sleep, you're doing what's right for you. And I don't mean being selfish, but I mean not holding back, not doing things because society wants you to do them or because you have fears that you're trying to avoid, but doing the right thing, the thing that you were always built to do. See, one of the things I believe is we all have completely different makeup. We've got different genetics, different upbringing, different influences. And I think if you combine all these things, what you find underneath all the fear is that each one of us is really well designed to do particular tasks. You know, and for me, for example, that was coaching. I didn't realize that I was basically well designed, I guess, to be a coach until I started facing my fears and doing what was right for me. And then coaching kind of naturally came out of that. It's the same with so many other people that I work with. They've been doing a job for 20, 30 years, but they've been doing it because they're afraid of not having money. As soon as they get rid of that fear, all of a sudden they really clearly want to do something else. And that other thing they want to do is much better suited to them. It's much better aligned with their strengths and their skills and their passions. So ultimately, an authentic life is every day is filled with activities that are based on what's best about you. I think that's probably the best way I can describe it. None of the tolerating stuff you don't like, try and make money or whatever.
But I guess that's the predicament that I would say, I don't know, majority of the world finds themselves in every day.
yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we're all raised to believe that we have to accept things we don't like in order to survive. And I'm starting to find more and more that that's just not true. Mm-hmm. It's a misbelief. Like a great example is, you know, I've got a client at the moment, a young guy, very little work experience. He's just started working in an IT company. And he doesn't want to work there necessarily. You know, after working with me for a while, he's realized he wants to do something different with his life. But he needs to build up some money in order to be able to start this thing. He needs to build up a background. Mm-hmm. So what we've found is rather than seeing his current job as something that he has to do that he doesn't like, he now sees it as a training ground for the future. So now he goes into this job, which is never going to be his long-term job, but he goes there to practice leadership skills. He goes there to learn about technology. He uses the workplace he's in to prepare him for the future that's authentic to him. Anyone can do this. You know, anyone who's an employee, if we're talking about careers, I guess, they can use whatever job they're in for the money as a training area or as a preparation ground for the thing they really want to be doing.
Okay. I think in the book you relate a lot of discovering your authentic lifestyle through motivation. And I guess that's what your client got. He got that motivation to stick with his job, to look at it in a sort of a different perspective in order to enjoy what he was doing, although it may not be where his passion lied.
Yeah, and it's tough, you know. We all get it. It's tough to stay motivated, and it's tough to be motivated in a situation that you don't want to be in. And I think ultimately if anyone, you know, listening to this is in a situation they don't want to be in, whether it's a job or a relationship or even just where you live, there's a question really of how do I make this enjoyable? How do I get the most out of the situation? And when you know what you want to be doing with your life, then you can see how the current situation relates to that and what you can get out of it. I think one of the biggest issues with motivation for most people is they don't actually know what they want. They haven't stopped to really consider what they want because they've been told it's selfish to do so. But actually, the way I see it, it's selfish not to do that because then you're depriving the world of whatever gift it is that you've got.
Do you think that there is a link between motivation and confidence?
I think they're almost the same thing. Sometimes I wonder if motivation is just another word. It might be confidence in action. Ultimately, motivation is what you feel when you're doing something you like without there being any fear involved. You know, that's how I see it. So if you're involved in an activity you love doing and you're not afraid of anything in that moment, then you're highly motivated. Yeah, I think in the book I talk about motivation being a combination of desire and courage, the ability to overcome fear with the ability to enjoy what you're doing. And that is confidence, really. Confidence is the state of pure joy and the absence of fear. So motivation, I guess, is the process of becoming confident in a way.
David Munro, a confidence coach and author of the book The Legendary Life. More about his book in just a moment. This is Razor Game, BFM 89.9.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Good morning, this is Raise Your Game. I'm Tasha Fusil, and our guest today is Dan Munro, who is a confidence coach and author of the book The Legendary Life. We were talking a little bit before about motivation and confidence. There are probably a lot of bad habits and patterns that we have that we don't even realize are symptomatic of having low confidence. And some of it, I think a lot of people can relate to, myself included. It's like worrying about what other people think, acting and feeling like a different person depending on who's around. How did you manage to relate that back to low confidence? How did you know that these were all related?
When I think back, that's actually the hardest part, is just becoming aware of what's really happening. Because, you know, we kind of live on autopilot a lot of the time. We just live the way we think. I guess, how do I put this? We almost assume that the way we're living is the only way to live, that that's just the cards we've been dealt, that's how we have to be. And the first and probably most difficult step is stopping for a second, going, wait, is this right? Should I be living this way? Is this the best way for me to live? For me, what I realized was I was becoming increasingly frustrated with the constant anxiety I felt around other people. And by anxiety, I don't mean I was panicking. It was just a feeling of discomfort when other people were around because I was worried about what they were thinking of me. And I started to wonder, well, should I be? Should I be worried about what other people think of me? I'd assumed forever that I should, but I'd never stopped to question it. And once I stopped to question it, I realized that so much of my behavior was linked to this worry. And so I just started to watch myself. And I remember going through this period of time, I was reading the book No More Mr. Nice Guy by Robert Glover. Great book. And there's an exercise in the book where he asks you to observe yourself. And I did this for 2 or 3 weeks, I can't quite remember, where I just watched myself and took notes to see how I behaved and kind of look at why I behaved the way I did. And I started to see these patterns. So when other people were around, I started to see this pattern of me changing my behavior and trying to keep them happy, which I now call people-pleasing. I noticed this happening, and I realized, wow, if I didn't care about what they thought, I wouldn't be doing any of this stuff. I wouldn't be trying to pretend that I don't have negative emotions. I wouldn't be helping people even though they haven't asked. I wouldn't be trying to solve conflicts that I had nothing to do with. All these things I was doing just because really deep down I wanted people to like me. And this raised a big question for me, a huge one. Is it possible to enjoy life without needing other people to like you or approve of you? And so I set out to answer that question. I thought, well, how could I design a life where I'm in complete control of how happy I am, where what other people think and how the rest of the world is behaving has no effect on how much I enjoy my life? And the book is essentially the process I figured out for doing that. I gotta say, it feels much better.
Yeah, because the book looks at discovering your true desires and you break it down into phases. And the first phase talks about preparing your mindset. And I suppose it's a lot easier said than done. But your suggestion of watching yourself just for 2 weeks or so, no action required, just taking time to observe your own self, your own patterns, is a good way to just take that first step to preparing your mindset for change.
Definitely. You know what it is really is just about becoming honest with yourself. Because we go through this process, like I used to work with criminal offenders, and despite what most people believe, they actually feel very guilty about what they do, all of them, except for a few. But most of them, they feel guilty about their crime, but of course they have to live with themselves. So what they do is they go through a process of justifying their behavior to themselves. You know, essentially all humans do this. We lie to ourselves to justify the behavior we're not proud of. And when you stop and observe yourself, essentially what you're doing is you're just stopping that process of lying to yourself and starting to be honest. So I used to say, hey, I'm such a great person for helping people all the time. That was the lie I told myself. And then when I started watching it, I'm like, actually, I impose on people by helping them when they don't want it. You know, and once that lie was removed, it gave me the freedom to start changing my behavior and testing that thing that I believed.
But it's quite scary. It's almost like you having to confront all these things that you thought were true. Because how do you know? How do you know you're lying to yourself? How do you know that the thoughts that you've been having this whole time that are ingrained in you are actually not reality?
Yeah, I've got a little practical exercise actually that can help with this. And you're right, it is scary. I'm not going to pretend it's not, because when you face reality, what you're actually doing is taking responsibility for your life. You can't blame anyone else after that. You can't put the responsibility on other people in the world for the way you think and feel. You have to take responsibility for it. And that's really the scary bit, because if you have to take responsibility for it, that means you're in control. That means you're the boss. Mm. That's a tough position to be in. Quite often people ask, well, how do I know? Like you say, how do I know if I'm doing the right thing or not? How do I know what's right for me? How do I know if I'm lying to myself? And I think the main answer is around the concept of guilt. If you feel uncomfortable or questioning or confused about your own behavior after you've done it, then odds are some part of you thinks that that behavior was not right. And one way to look at this, because it's hard to distinguish between doing the right thing and feeling uncomfortable or doing the wrong thing and feeling uncomfortable, there's these three questions you can answer, but they're just nice easy questions that can help you figure it out. The first question is, what does it mean to be a good person? And there's no rules for this. You just write down or talk through whatever your answer is to that question. And then the second question is, what do you see in someone you admire? And this is where it gets really interesting, because people often, when they ask the first question, what does it mean to be a good person, they write about themselves. They are generous and kind and blah, blah, blah. And really, they're just saying, I am these things. Hmm. But when you answer the question, what do I see in someone I admire, you start to list the things you wish you were that you don't see in yourself. And this is where we really start to see what it is that you've been lying to yourself about. So a great example, for someone like me, a people pleaser, if someone asks me what's a good person, I'll say, kind, generous, caring, compassionate, all the things that a people pleaser does all the time anyway. And then I ask the next question, what do I see in someone I admire? And I'm going to have things like assertiveness, courage, risk-taking, leadership, all those things I wish I saw in myself that I don't see. And it's in those things that you get to figure out where it is that you've been lying to yourself. Like when you didn't assert yourself, what lie did you tell yourself to make that okay? Did you say it wasn't the right time? Did you say there's no point in rocking the boat? What were the lies? And that leads to the third question, which is the really tough one. What do I see in the people that I'm jealous of? Because those are the ones who are really living by the values you wish you lived by. You know, those are the ones getting the results that you wish you had. And it's underneath that kind of jealousy, there's actually something very good, which is a clear sign as to where you need to focus your change, where you need to focus the parts, I guess the parts of you that need to change the most for you to not have to lie to yourself anymore.
The first question I posed in the beginning of the interview, which was, what would your life look like if there were no limitations? And I think this links a lot to the third phase in your book, which is about planning and it's about dreaming big. Why is it important to really like think without limitations? And wouldn't it be sort of you kind of ignoring reality, ignoring the real challenges and obstacles that are there?
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's actually, it's about acknowledging the obstacles honestly. See, when I say think about it without limitations, what we're trying to do is tap into a kind of planning that can happen without fear. See, if you plan from a fear-based position, there's going to be severely limited and often misguided, because quite often fear is actually not helpful. I mean, fear is essentially what's there to keep us alive. You know, it's the thing that stops us from jumping in the lion cage at the zoo. It's a helpful thing to have in most cases, but when it comes to things like your career, your social life, most of the fears that you've been raised to believe are actually not helping you. And so by asking yourself limitless type questions, you're tapping into the part of your brain, that rational frontal lobe, which is unaffected by fear. So it tells you what life would be like if you weren't afraid of things. And it's from there that you can actually plan for the things that you're afraid of. So to make this more sort of practical and understandable, if you're planning your career from a fear-based perspective, you might say something like, well, in the next 5 years, hopefully I'll get a promotion. But if you plan it from a limitless perspective, you'd be like, okay, I want to run a massive empire of health food stores. Something like that. I'm just making this up. See, a massive difference if you take the fear away. But now you've got the fears kind of reignited by the very thing that you've asked for. Like, oh my God, how would I start this massive thing of health food stores? And you can actually start planning for them in a much more practical and helpful way. So the point is that I'm making here is that by planning big is you'll trigger the fear in a helpful way. Fear will tell you these are the barriers you need to overcome, rather than the fear telling you don't start at all.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's not like thinking this way is going to wipe out the challenges or wipe out the fears. They'll still be there, but you learn to use them as a way to move forward towards the goal that you've already set for yourself.
Yeah, I think you put it a lot clearer.
No, this is just me, yeah.
That's
understand.
Exactly what I was trying to say. Yep.
Okay, cool. Well, we're run out of time, but before we finish, in the book you talk about manic motivation, and I just really wanted to know what that was.
Yeah, so this is it's a funny problem to have. It's when you become so motivated that you actually burn yourself out. Because you're trying new ideas all the time, you can't say no to anything, and you're just going crazy. And I think that's better than not doing anything with your life, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also almost as unhelpful because you won't make progress. So manic motivation can come from a kind of peak of motivation where you just want to do everything at once. And really what I talk about in that chapter is the process of narrowing it down to what actually matters and putting all your energy into that small portion of your life. So rather than trying to fix your whole life and make everything perfect at once, choose the one thing that needs to change the most, the thing you're most afraid of, and target it. You know, go to war with that thing, and you'll make the most progress, as opposed to the allure of trying to do everything at once, which usually leads to no progress at all.
Great. Thank you so much, Dan, for spending time with us today. I've been speaking to Dan Munro, a confidence coach and author of the book, The Legendary Life. If you'd like more information, you can head to theinspirationallifestyle.com. This has been Raise Your Game with me, Tasha Fusil, on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.